ACB Radio appreciates the generous support of the Seeing Eye, the nation's oldest dog guide school. Let the Seeing Eye put the harness of independence in your hand. Visit our website, www.seeingeye.org.
Hang out with other ACB Radio listeners. Talk with the hosts. Provide suggestions about the future of ACB Radio. It's all possible through the ACB Radio Friends List.
Thank you for being a friend.
Log on and sign up now. Send a blank message to friends-subscribe at acbradio.org. That's friends-subscribe at acbradio.org. And thank you for being a friend of ACB Radio.
Programming on ACB Radio is made possible in part through financial support from the Verizon Corporation. Verizon, a proud supporter of ACB Radio.
I am sorry, but your baby is blind,
the doctor says.
The problem is your child cannot see well enough to keep up with classroom work,
the teacher says. These are words a parent never wants to hear, but you know it doesn't have to be the end of the world. The American Council of the Blind is here for you and your child. We will ensure that your child meets blind people who have succeeded in getting their education and who work as lawyers, teachers, automobile mechanics, and in virtually every other profession. For more information or a membership application, call 800-424-8666 or contact us online at www.acb.org. The American Council of the Blind, forging new frontiers for our future.
The American Foundation for the Blind is proud to support ACB Radio. AFB is the publisher of Access World, the only assistive technology magazine for people who are blind or visually impaired. Visit www.afb.org to read a sample issue.
ACB Radio.
Welcome back. This is ACB Radio Mainstream, broadcasting live from the David L. Lawrence Convention Center in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And we are broadcasting coverage of the convention, the 42nd National Convention of the American Council of the Blind. We are into another business session in just a moment when President Chris Gray will call us back to order following a recess. And it was hoped that it may be possible to finish business today. That's sort of looking fairly unlikely now, I would say. But I think they'll probably give it a shot. I suspect, though, that we will be back. We will return tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. for a concluding business session. Now, just some program notes as we get a bit organized here. That tonight we will be broadcasting from the Western Convention Center Hotel in Pittsburgh, and we will be broadcasting the banquet from there. Jay Dowden is going to be the MC, so anything can happen. And he'll be emceeing the banquet this evening, and I'm sure there'll be a number of surprises and exciting things. That's about all I can tell you about it, really. So that's coming up this evening. We suspect that, or we expect that that will probably start at around about 8:15 Eastern Time, excuse me, zero universal, or just a little after. The time is a little variable because it just depends on how long it takes to get the dinner out of the way before proceedings start. there's some activity going on. You may be able to hear the microphones being bashed about and things, and that's a signal that people are arriving at the podium and getting ready to resume. Most people have taken advantage of the quick meals in the 90 minutes that we've had to refresh, and I guess they sort of became slow meals today because so many people were lining up for them because of how convenient they were to the ballroom. The quick meals were here at the David L. Lawrence Convention Centre. And they had a range of sandwiches and hot dogs, and I even tried to get back into my healthy lifestyle that I seem to have let slip over the last week or so since I've been in Pittsburgh and had a salad. So people are starting to head in now. Still to come, obviously the elections have concluded, by the way, and just to recap in case you missed those, it is a status quo result. Chris Gray was re-elected president, convincingly, with about 61% of the vote, as I recall. Steve Spiker is first vice president in quite a narrow victory over Ed Bradley, who contested that position. MJ Schmidt was elected unopposed as second vice president. There were a couple of people who sought to, who nominated others for that position, but nominations were declined, both from Ed Bradley and Brian Charlson. Donna Sadager was elected unopposed as secretary, and in a very close race, Ardis Bazin is once again ACB treasurer, just beating Mike Godino. We do have some constitution and bylaws amendments still to come, affecting the Board of Publications. And we have some resolutions. I have lost track of how many, but I understand there were around about 35 resolutions to progress. So there are still a number. Also, it's possible that we will revisit one of the resolutions that was taken before lunch, which was voted on at the same time as voting was taking place for the position of treasurer. And there was a suggestion that there is some call for a roll call on that one. This is the GDUI resolution with respect to the aftermath, if you like, of the Iowa guide dog issue. Saying hello to Pat Price, who, of course, was a Henley Award winner this year, and also to Rachel Bader, who've dropped me an email. Rachel said, as somebody who's been involved in the resolutions committee process at the state level of Florida, it's great to hear resolutions coming to the convention and to hear how it all goes when people are unable to attend convention in person. So we're glad to be of service. We are due to conclude today at 4 in just an hour and 10 minutes. I don't know how set in stone that time finish is. But if it looks like business could be concluded today, I suppose there's a possibility that it might be extended just a little.
As we're getting ourselves together, how about if we do a couple of door prizes?
Yeah.
Chris?
Yes.
Yeah.
There's so much confusion.
Hi there. I'm not coming through. I'm not coming through at all. Hello?
Sorry, I opened up the camera.
Oh, you know, it threw me at the end.
Hello? Does anybody hear me?
Yeah, I'm glad. I don't know how much I slept.
Chris, Ray, and Ray,
yeah.
I'm here.
Did they do a door prize?
Haven't done one yet.
It looks like we're not really in a position to do a door prize right now.
We need a microphone.
Oh, door prize folks need a microphone. Jay says you're on now.
Hello. Oh, yeah.
There you go.
It's really been on the whole time. I don't know.
We are going to give away $50 from the American Council of the Blind of Alabama.
All right, Alabama.
Can you read the name? Or?
Bernice Kandarian, Mountainville, California.
Hey, Bernice.
Bernice, if you're not here, you're going to be so mad.
Huh? Is Bernice here? No.
No, they say no.
Robert Taylor, East Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
He's not here either.
Joel Talaferro, Grand Rapids, Michigan.
I know she's around somewhere. Drinks on Joe tonight.
We're going to do another 50, so guys, listen up. 50 from Oregon Council, okay?
Ann Gott Goodwin, Salt Lake City, Utah.
And now we have a portfolio, paper clips, whatever, and $25 from where? Oh, Kansas City, Progressive Council of the Blind. Yeah. Yeah. You need a name.
Arthur Thomas, Raleigh, North Carolina. Must be here.
It might be on the wrong side. I'm not sure.
Do any of you guys know who Bruce Benzler is?
Oh, okay. Bruce Benzler. I gotta get around. We seem to be getting any children. Maple syrup from Vermont again.
Oh, that sounds nice.
Nancy Goldsmith, Fort Worth, Texas.
Don't hear a sound.
Walter Spillum, Tokyo, Japan. Richard Villa, Austin, Texas.
Are you here, Richard? Oh, they're saying he's not here.
Wayne Thompson, West Covina, California. Oh,
thank you. Thank you. I know.
Yeah, okay.
Appreciate it.
Tony Rock, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Carol Moody, St. Louis, Missouri.
That didn't sound like Carol to me.
No.
Shannon Giordano, Yorktown Heights, New York.
No.
Kathy Wheeler, Independence, Missouri.
No.
She's parliamentarian. No.
Miles Tamashiro, Milani, Hawaii. Bill Lewis, Wichita, Kansas.
Gee, no maple syrup.
Teresa Goodrich, Milwaukee. Teresa.
Okay, that'll be the last door prize for now.
Okay.
Is there by chance a Bruce Benzler in the room? He's gone home. Okay. If Terry Pacheco is in the room, could you please come to the front? Okay. Now, ladies and gentlemen, if I can have your attention. Before we left to have lunch, and I hope you all had a good lunch. I was certainly hungry. Someone is saying they're ready for their siesta. Well, just a minute, we'll get more resolutions on, and you can nod right off. But... The question arose as we were about to go into recess. Let's have order. Let's really have order so we can concentrate on the business we have to get done here. The issue was raised by Winifred Downing just before we went to lunch that we did not call to see if people were inclined to have a roll call on the last resolution. Maybe it passed and maybe it didn't. And I have to be honest with you, it's very difficult to tell up here whether things do and don't pass when the votes are very close. And we've had a couple of close votes today. Now, the resolution was debated, and I must say, without wishing to debate the resolution, that I'm inclined to think it's a pretty difficult resolution ever to do anything with, and you heard some very good arguments against it that I happen to agree with. And I really, on the other hand, believe it is important for this organization to move on. We've made our decisions about the guide dog issue, and I don't want to get into a big fight about a resolution that frankly doesn't do anything anyway. Having said that, are there 25 people who wish to have a roll call vote on the resolution? And do you wish to hear the resolve clauses before you make that decision? There are some requests to hear the resolve clauses, and after we hear them, it will take a standing vote of 25 people to have a roll call on this resolution.
Point of order, Mr. President.
What's your point? And your name, please.
It's Bob Hachet from Massachusetts. It seems
yes,
as
Bob.
Though we passed that resolution, moved on. I heard no cries for a roll call or anything of that nature.
Bob, so we were in the middle of an election at that time. I permitted no counting and did not ask for calls for a 25-person standing vote. A request was made after the election that we do so, and that's what we're doing right now. Is that Kathy calling for the floor? No, you need a mic because of the sound devices and the recording. You must have a mic.
Mr. President, could I say something while she's looking for a mic?
Is it regarding this issue?
Yes.
Yes?
I would just like to say that it sounded like it was correctly called from back here as it was from up front. And on every issue that we've done a roll call on this, the call has been correct. And I think we need to move on. We have a lot of business to take care of.
Well, if more than 25 people disagree with you, we'll have to have a roll call.
Mr. President?
Yes, Kathy.
I need a point of clarification, first of all. I wasn't aware that the president has to ask whether or not people want a roll call. We're not shy around here. I thought we'd just get up and ask for a roll call. Myself, I voted no, and I was unhappy with the call because I thought it was no. But then I'm not unhappy enough to hold this organization enough up for the rest of the day.
Kathy, I'm 100% with you. I'm hoping 25 people don't stand up.
And I have one more question.
Yes.
I am curious as all get out. Are we on the radio today, and were we on there yesterday? Are we showing the world how we get along?
Yes, we are.
Oh, my goodness. We ought to apologize to those folks out there.
Ladies and gentlemen, every word we have said has been on the radio.
All over the world.
Okay, that's something to keep in mind.
Okay. Are there 25 people who are standing for this resolution?
Wait a minute.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. I did say that, didn't I?
Okay. I will read the
resolve.
Who's
having the siesta here?
Resolved that this organization urges its officers and directors to respectfully consider any affiliate's right to take a position other than that of the national organization, but not to delay or postpone advocacy efforts based on achieving consensus between that affiliate and the national organization or between affiliates. That's it.
Okay. That is the meat, the resolve of the resolution. Are there 25 people who feel strongly that we need to have a roll call vote on this resolution? I think we can move on with our business.
Shall we finish up with Ray's stuff, Jeff?
Yes, I can give him my.
I will now recognize the chairman of the Constitution and Bylaws Committee to continue our work with Constitution and Bylaws, Ray Campbell.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. President. And let's see. Okay. We are going to go on now to this is the last of the three amendments to Bylaw 7 that we have. It is Bylaw 7. Braille page 51, Bylaw 7, Section A. We're going to insert two new sentences following the fifth sentence in the section. Now, that fifth sentence reads, just so you have some context, this is not what we're amending, just so you have some context, quote, a majority of the Board of Publications may agree to include an editor slash producer of any nationally distributed Board of Publications project of the American Council of the Blind as an ex officio member of the board. Now, right after that, this is the proposed wording that will go right after what I just read. Quote, the Board of Publications shall ensure that the ability of ACB members to freely express and share opinions is not abridged by any mechanism within ACB unless such speech, that is hard to say, is of an obscene nature or is clearly intended to personally attack without any redeeming quality, or is clearly, as understood by a reasonable person, incomprehensible or unintelligible. The Board of Publications shall protect these rights of free speech by taking necessary actions to set policy, provide redress through orders to reverse or modify actions of ACB staff or elected officials, and to periodically advise the membership of their constitutional right and responsibility for the free exchange of ideas in order to advance the democracy of ACB. Mr. President, the Constitutions Committee, who's having a siesta now, recommended a do not pass. That recommendation notwithstanding, I will move for the adoption of this amendment.
Mr. Chairman.
Is there a second, first of all? Okay. Let me explain very briefly why we recommended a do not pass on this. The reason is that there are a couple of reasons. Number one, we were concerned because the committee discussed it that there are decisions that need to be made in terms of limited space to print things like letters to the editor and that sort of thing. And while we certainly want to see all points of view respected and discussed and have both sides of issues have an opportunity to do that, we just did not feel that this amendment really would almost say that we had to print everything, such as letters to the editor in the Braille form that we get. Secondly, we kind of felt that the makeup of the Board of Publications, how it is constituted now, and it clearly says that it must set standards and editorial policies, and we felt that it was a little bit redundant to put this language in here. So this is why we recommended a do not pass. I will recognize Mr. Pomerantz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I speak in opposition to this bylaws amendment. Even the Supreme Court has difficulty ascertaining what obscenity is. I suspect that I can define it for myself, but when I watch television, I do have to shake my head. It is the role of the Board of Publications, as Mr. Campbell points out, to define and develop standards. I've seen a number of things on the leadership list which I would classify as personal attacks, but other persons would just assume is part of a strong and spirited and perhaps overly emotional debate. I think we need to leave the matter of content to the Board of Publications rather than attempting to define something that is difficult at best to define as part of a bylaws amendment. Please oppose this bylaw.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay. I will recognize a speaker for, if there is one. Who calls for the floor?
This is Bud Keith, Arlington, Virginia.
Okay, Bud, are you going to speak in favor of this amendment or
against
it?
Not at all.
Okay. Do I have somebody speaking in favor of the amendment, first of all? Okay, hearing no calls. Bud, go ahead.
In addition to what Mitch has said, this is not the kind of language that goes in bylaws. I don't know who is going to determine who is the reasonable person. What is clearly unintelligible? What is clearly uncomprehensible? The language itself is problematic, but what is even more insidious is to attempt to make the Board of Publications an enforcement agency. The Board of Publications in no way should ever have the right to reverse the actions of the elected officers of this body. It is the convention that elects these people to act for us, and no partially appointed committee should ever have the right to reverse their actions.
Okay. Do I hear any speakers for this amendment? Okay. We've had two against, and nobody has chosen to speak for it. Let's vote, shall we? Is Charlie wanting to...
I don't know if it's Charlie.
Okay, somebody's coming.
I want to represent those who are no longer here, who introduced the amendment, as best I can understand their thinking, because I think it's worth the convention hearing why they felt it was important to do it. Effectively, their concern is that absent any affirmative statement with regard to the free expression of ideas and speech, and absent any responsibility clearly articulated in the bylaws, the role of the Board of Publications is left too ambiguous to necessarily provide those members with a strong sense of their responsibility or to assure the membership of the mechanism within the organization to ensure that there is a free exchange of ideas. Irrespective of all of that, I think that I would like to point out for Bud and for Mitch that in the first set of commentaries, I agree with Mitch that there really is no way you can properly represent free speech without getting into definition itself as limiting. With respect to Bud's issue, I think he's probably correct that there may well be another mechanism that's better placed in the organization to ensure the right. But I think the intent of the amendment, as was introduced, was to raise that right. And perhaps what makes more sense is to refer this back to the committee or the board or someplace to rework this in a way that works for everybody. Thanks.
Okay.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair.
I'm hearing a call for the floor, and I think it's Ken Stewart.
Yes, Ken Stewart, yeah. I would suggest...
Go ahead.
I would suggest that the chair just withdraw the motion. Nobody is sponsoring the motion. Nobody moved it. We just announce it and move on. We don't need to discuss something that nobody's moving.
It's been moved and seconded, Ken.
By you. You can withdraw it.
I think I would rather vote on this. I mean, people are... Okay, I've heard the question being called. I think I'm going to go ahead and take the vote on this. All those in favor of this amendment, please signify by saying aye. Opposed?
No.
The amendment fails. Okay. Okay, guys, let's... And I want to say, these three amendments that we've just done in the Constitution were a little bit... controversial, I guess, is a good word. I just want to thank all of you. I hope I'm not speaking too soon, but you've all been extremely civil, and I really appreciate this because I'm kind of newer to all this. And had a year experience, but I'm stalling as I try to get into another file. There we go. It's great. I mean, this is one of the great principles that people like Durward McDaniel and that fought for, is our principle to have free exchange and free debate, and sometimes a little debate that sounds a little contentious, but we get it done, and I think it's great. The next amendment is on Braille page 10, Article 4, Section D. We're going to add a sentence to the end of the section, which reads, quote, I'm getting off the mic there. There we go. Which reads, quote, this narrative summary shall include a record of how each board member voted on all roll call votes. The current wording of Section D is, D, the officers of this organization, the 10 directors and the immediate past president, shall constitute the board of directors. A member of the board of publications selected at each annual convention by that board, for a term of 1 year shall attend all meetings of the board of directors, may make motions, and may participate in discussion, but shall not vote. Within 30 days after each meeting, this member of the Board of Publications shall be responsible for writing a narrative summary of actions taken during each Board of Directors meeting for publication in the Braille Forum. The proposed wording is, D, the officers of this organization, the 10 directors, and the immediate past president shall constitute the Board of Directors. A member of the Board of Publications selected at each annual convention by that board for a term of 1 year shall attend all meetings of the Board of Directors, may make motions, and may participate in discussion, but shall not vote. Within 30 days after each meeting, this member of the Board of Publications shall be responsible for writing a narrative summary of actions taken during each Board of Directors meeting for publication in the Braille Forum. This narrative summary shall include a record of how each board member voted on all roll call votes. The committee recommends a do pass, and I so move. Okay, is there discussion? Hearing no calls for the floor. Okay, I heard a yes, yes. If yes, yes, we'll get to the mic and tell us who he is. We'll have discussion.
Discussion.
Okay, and who's calling for the floor?
Let's get the microphone. We got it.
There you go.
This is Oral Miller of the District of Columbia.
Okay.
I stand to oppose this proposed amendment for several reasons. One is, it's based on a misconception, and that misconception is that this narrative summary is like minutes. Now, minutes, as we know, are a record that first appears as a draft, is then seen to the people involved, corrections are made, changes are made, details are corrected, etc. And as we know, many hard decisions are based on details. You know, those details that are sort of the devil in many cases. So, a summary, as it's referred to here, is really not like minutes that have been seen beforehand, that have been corrected, changed in such a way that the details that have been greatly responsible for many decisions have been corrected and so forth, as well as for accuracy, before those minutes are then actually approved as the official decisions that have been made. There is no such safeguard, of course, in this situation. This is a report that's written by one person and then published. So, in many, many cases, those hard decisions are based on those details that are the devil of the decision. You know, the devil's in the details. So, in addition to that, there are many decisions that are made by the Board of Directors that are not to be reported. And this is simply based on the reality of business. An organization that's conducting a board meeting, for example, by telephone, that is dealing with sensitive business matters, relating perhaps to convention bids, negotiations, proposed litigation, in some cases management issues, management questions. And I'm not referring to executive session, a meeting that by its definition is executive session. But a meeting that is being conducted by people who are operating on the assumption that they can discuss things frankly and not as they would be conducting business for an article that's to be written by someone. And by the way, I don't recall this particular issue of names of people ever having come up before until the last few months. So the one thing I would mention in closing is this, because I've already heard this mentioned by some people. The question that some have asked is, gee, what's wrong? Don't you want people to know how you voted? That's not the issue. And by asking that question...
Wrap it up in about 30 seconds, Oral.
Okay, by asking that question, we're not showing the appropriate respect for people who have a different point of view. So if people do ask me that question, I'm afraid I'll have to ask you another question in return, equally unfair, and that is, have you stopped beating your wife or your husband or kicking your guide dog yet?
Mr. Chairman.
Okay. I heard Mr. Charlie Hodge call for the floor. Before we do that, is there someone with a stopwatch up here that can be up here? Because I want to make sure that we give people fair and equal time here.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Charlie, I'll let you go ahead.
First of all, I want people to know that this apparently this issue has come up over summaries that I have written as the selected member from the Board of Publications to sit as the ex officio member of the Board of Directors. I did not submit this amendment. It's not a self-serving amendment by me. I want people to know that. Secondly, Mr. Miller, a good friend of mine, has insinuated that the summaries I've written in recent months have somehow revealed confidential and proprietary information. I deny that. And I challenge anyone to prove that I've in any way breached the confidentiality of the board. Thirdly, this amendment only adds one sentence dealing with a very specific issue. That's that the summary should include a record of how all board members vote on roll call votes. Has nothing to do with confidential business contracts or anything else like that. It's specious, and I resent the insinuation. So I would say to you, this is just an issue involving how board members vote on roll call votes. If you would want that to be in the summary, vote for this amendment, please. If you don't, you can vote against it. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman.
Patrick.
Okay, I heard Pat second. Who was the first lady?
Dawn Christensen.
Okay, Dawn. Dawn, go ahead.
I would like to echo the thoughts that Oral shared. In addition to that, board minutes are available to anyone who wants them once they've been approved by the board. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
I heard Pat Schreck.
This is Pat Schreck.
Go ahead.
I would like to say that the bylaw is already a bylaw with respect to narrative summary, that all that's being added, as Charlie said, is the roll call vote, which I think is an important thing for members to know. It's important that we know what our board does, and it certainly is convenient to be able to read that in the Braille forum as opposed to asking for a copy of the lengthy minutes. Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
I heard a woman first before the gentleman. Who calls for the floor?
Mr. Chair, this is Janelle Edwards, the maker of the bylaw amendment.
Yes, Janelle.
I'd like to make a couple of points. First of all, I think that this should be public information, that this is part of what our organization stands for, that we should know, be able to have this information from our board, that in most cases, those who can afford to attend the meetings can do so, and those who may not be able to afford to do so cannot go, and that any information that was accidentally put out incorrectly as to who voted on some issue could obviously be corrected in a later issue of the forum. And also that obviously anything done in executive session would not be included in these minutes. And just referring you to Charlie, the things that Charlie Hodge said so much more eloquently than I could, that I appreciate everyone's help in putting this information together for me, that I personally, if this does not pass, will be requesting copies of the minutes from the National Office or the or the president of one of my affiliates or whatever, but I mean, here we are in these times of budget problems and everything, and think how much more efficient it is just to get out all this information to everyone in one source. And I would like to personally thank Charlie for his efforts in this area, and I just think it's something that we as members are entitled to, and okay. I encourage you to vote for my amendment.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Is there anybody who wishes to speak against?
No, that's not me.
Okay. We've had a couple in a row, four. I want to get one against. I've got three, four, and two against. Is there anybody speaking against? Who calls?
This is Carla Rashevall. I would like to propose an amendment.
Okay.
Oh, no.
I would like to add, I would like to, I'm trying to read my copy here. This amendment does not explicitly exclude executive session votes. Those are covered in other sections of the bylaws, but in the Constitution. But I think that to avoid confusion and, quite frankly, nitpicking between sections of the Constitution in the future, that it is also necessary to include that exclusion here. Therefore, I would propose that that the sentence read, "This narrative summary shall include a record of how each board member voted on all roll call votes, except in the case of executive sessions."
No. Okay, is there a second to Carla's amendment? Okay, we're now debating the amendment. Any calls for the floor? Okay, hearing none. All those in favor of Carla's amendment to include the words "except executives," let me make sure I get it right, "except in the case of executive session," all those in favor of adding those words to this, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
Aye.
The ayes have it.
Mr. Chairman?
Okay, we are back to the main motion now.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead, Kathy Skivers.
You know, we have two conventions a year in California, and they're open, and all of our members sit there, and they hear everything the board does except executive sessions. Anything of personnel nature, any other kind of thing that comes up is handled in executive session. However, everything is open, and I, for one, have appreciated greatly knowing how the board votes. We come here and we elect people. Some of us know the people. Some of us don't know the people. Once we've elected you, we don't know whether you're doing what we want you to do or not. And we have a right to know that.
Okay.
So we want to have this, and I hope that everybody will vote to see to it that we have board votes in
okay.
the forum.
Okay.
Point of information.
Point of information. Who calls for the floor?
Karen Campbell.
Okay. What is your point?
I just want to clarify this for those who might not realize it. We are voting on the section of the Constitution in this case, correct?
That is correct. So it would take a two-thirds vote to pass it. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay. I should
This is Lynn Crowell. I have a point of clarification to ask.
Okay.
Does this refer to every cot, pick, and roll call?
And what it would refer, it says all roll call votes, Lynn, except in the case of executive session. So if there is a vote taken at a board meeting where the secretary calls the roll to ascertain how each board member wants to vote, it would refer to all of them. Yes.
That could be a heck of a long narrative summary. Thank you.
Okay. So I will refer. May I regard your comments as being against the amendment? In that case, or. Okay. We've had three, four, and three against, by my count. How about we vote? All those in favor of the adoption of this constitutional amendment, remember it takes two-thirds, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The ayes have it. Okay. We have one more. This is the last one, ladies and gentlemen, of amendments. Okay, we're going to strike. We're going to, let me get to my right spot here. This
Ray,
is another, yes.
This is Chris, and I'd like to just say something for the record, if I might. And I am only saying it for the record. When we meet together face-to-face as a board of directors. When we vote, it's pretty easy to tell when things win or lose. Sometimes there'll be a call for, or we will decide, to have a record vote when we know a vote's going to be close, or when there is a desire on the part of one or more board members to have each board member commit themselves one way or another to an item. This new way of doing business is excellent in that case, and I only want to point out now, for the record, that when the board meets in conference telephone calls, we often will do a record vote because on a conference call you simply can't conduct your business any other way. I hope that as we move along in our work together, and it will be done much more on conference calls, the membership will not interpret the taking of roll call votes as an inability of this board to work together. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Okay. Who calls for the floor?
Yes, this is Oral Miller.
Okay. Oral?
I'm not proposing this exactly, but I want to remind the membership that since this requires a two-thirds majority of the entire vote, there is the option for the full roll call procedure, if that's what 25 people are interested in.
Oral, are you asking for people to stand?
I would give them that opportunity, yes.
All right.
If they wish to.
You all have the opportunity to stand. If there are 25 people standing, we will have a roll call vote.
Unfortunately, as you know, Mr. President, over the years we've seen a lot of business conducted at the end of a convention when the crowd is very small.
Yes, I know. Yeah, I know.
And it's difficult to
tell. Do we have
25
people?
Okay. Believe me, some of the roll calls earlier could have been...
We're going to move on. If the president will...
Oral, I don't think we have 25 from what everybody's saying, so I think we need to move on.
Okay. That's all right.
And I'm sorry, Mr. President, I may have spoke out of turn there. I'm sorry about that. This is the last amendment, ladies and gentlemen. It's a constitutional amendment, Braille page 13, Article 4. We're going to strike out the current Section I and replace it with a new Section I. The current wording, I, no member of the Board of Directors shall receive compensation for services to the American Council of the Blind. He may be reimbursed for actual expenses incurred in the exercise of his duties. No professional staff employee of the council shall be eligible for election to any office in this organization. The proposed wording, I, 1. No member of the Board of Directors or the Board of Publications shall receive compensation for services to the American Council of the Blind. He or she may be reimbursed for actual expenses incurred in the performance of his or her official duties. Number 2. No compensated staff member of this organization shall be eligible to serve on either the Board of Directors or Board of Publications. Number 3. All compensated staff of this organization shall refrain from either campaigning or otherwise attempting to influence, the outcome of any election. Violation of this subsection may be considered grounds for dismissal. The committee recommends a do pass, and I so move.
Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Chairman, Paul Edwards.
Mr. Chair.
I believe I heard Charlie Crawford first. So, Charlie, you have the floor.
Well, I'm sure you're not anticipating my speaking in favor of the amendment, so... I want everybody in this room to listen to this because it's pretty damn important to those of us who are staff in this organization. And I want you to listen closely, because what I'm going to try to convey in less than 3 minutes is 2 years' worth of experience. What I'm about to say is effectively that this organization has an agenda and a mission. As a part of that agenda and mission are the operations of the national office and other staff in this organization to accomplish those agenda items and missions. I believe, and I know, that the majority of this organization understands that the national office and other employees of the organization have worked, I think, admirably to accomplish and advance that agenda and mission and have achieved those goals that the organization seeks, I think, in very, very good ways. I think also that the extent to which there is a reasonable relationship between the political entities of the organization and the staff is something that we have and something the current language of the Constitution provides for. There's no question that the current language of the Constitution is fine. But this addition of somehow influencing, campaigning, changing outcomes of elections, that's bogus. I don't know where it comes from, but somebody's pretty sick to think that any person working for this organization doesn't have an inherent right as a member of the organization to make representations to people when they're not engaged in the professional duties that they are assigned to do by the organization. Otherwise, you could hire people with an IQ, sorry, Ruth, of my dog to do the job. And lastly, I'm going to say this, and I mean this without any rancor, and I mean this without any malice, but I tell you this. I don't believe any self-respecting person could be the executive director of this organization under that rubric. Certainly Durwood McDaniel didn't live by that rubric. And other executive directors in this organization, I can't believe, would have lived under that rubric. And I thoroughly oppose it. And I'm telling you, as a representative, hopefully of the staff, that you vote for this amendment, then that's a direct vote of incompetence for the staff, and I certainly would reject it. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay. I heard Paul Edwards first.
Mr. Chairman.
Margie Donovan.
I heard Paul Edwards call for the floor earlier. So, Paul,
Thank you. The floor is yours.
Ray, I'm speaking against it, so if you'd like to recognize someone to speak for it first, I'd be welcome to.
No problem. No problem, Paul. So is there anyone who wishes to speak for this amendment? Okay. I don't hear any. Paul, go right ahead.
Well, aside from at least the spirit of what Charlie said, I'd like to add just two other concerns. In the second section of this amendment, it would seem to exclude individuals being ex officio members of bodies. While it doesn't explicitly prohibit that, I think reading a constitutional amendment that would suggest that people couldn't be members would have to be interpreted that they couldn't be members in any way. And that would mean that the role of Earlene Hughes, Jonathan Mosen, and Penny Reeder on the Board of Publications and on the Public Relations Committee would effectively be curtailed by this amendment. I think that if we have difficulties with staff, the way to handle those difficulties, if they become so inherently impossible that we can't deal with them, is already allowed for, and that is the president should ask or should recommend to the board of directors that an individual who is in that situation be terminated. And essentially that's his job, his responsibility, and essentially that there isn't a need to clutter up our Constitution with language that suggests that there's an inherent conflict between staff and the elected officials of this organization.
Mr. Chairman,
okay. Margie Chairman. Donovan.
Do we have someone wanting to speak for the amendment? We've had two.
Mr. Chairman.
You want to speak for, Charlie?
Yes.
Okay, and I didn't... you're the first one I've heard wanting to speak for, so go right ahead.
The allegation that Durbin McDaniel and other people would not live by this rubric is just simply not true. Staff is employed by all of us, and by the entire organization, and staff should be... The board of directors has voted on several occasions that staff should be scrupulously neutral in internal political affairs. Staff, however, there have been certain situations that have arisen where staff, in some people's minds anyway, have
actively campaign for one candidate or another. And that's not right. We all hire and pay for staff, and they should be neutral in internal elections because they are then accountable to the elected leaders. If they campaign and somebody else is elected who they disfavored or opposed, then there is the possibility of some sort of reprisal or retaliation for political activity. Federal employees for many years have lived under the Hatch Act, which is, again, a political neutrality type provision. Now, I'm not totally happy with the Hatch Act, but what I would tell you is political neutrality in internal elections for our staff does not deprive them of the right of their membership to vote and to speak when personally or privately to people when they're asked for their opinions and so forth. It just is meant to be a protection for our staff, not in any way to denigrate or be a criticism of our staff.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay, I've had two against and one for.
Margie Donovan speaking in opposition to the amendment.
I'm going to take the woman who wants to speak for, Margie. I know you've been there a long time, and then I'll take you after her, okay?
If somebody answers my question, I may change my mind. This is Jean Mann. But isn't there some sort of a ruling that board members or at least offices are not allowed to actively campaign for other board members or officers?
No.
Does anyone know?
No, there's nothing in there.
There is no such ruling? The rule is simply that officers...
But they do it.
The rule is simply that officers cannot speak on the floor for other officers or board of directors.
There's no rule prohibiting that.
Mr. Chairman.
More of a gentleman's.
Mr. Chairman.
Jean,
Mr.
do you Chairman. Want to say any? Is there any more you need to say or?
Well, I needed an answer to that ruling because that's kind of not what I thought.
Mr. Chairman.
If somebody wants to tell me different, then.
I peruse the Constitution.
Jean Mann's question.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
I'm going to give. Let's see. I'm trying to think who came first.
Carla. This is
Mr.
Carla.
Mr. Chairman.
I heard Carla, and then I heard Kathy. Margie's been waiting to speak. I want somebody to speak for this amendment.
I wish to speak to Jean Mann's question.
Okay, Carla, go right ahead.
Okay, I think that the section of the Constitution or bylaws that Jean is referring to is the provision that no officer or candidate can sit on the nominating committee. And I think that's the section to which Jean may be referring or may be thinking about.
Okay, well, there was maybe it was just a decree from a president at one time that if you were an officer, that you did not speak on the floor for another officer. So maybe that's what I'm thinking. Okay.
Anybody for the amendment?
Mr. Chairman?
Okay, I'm going to let Margie speak, and then I'm going to take us to a vote since we haven't had a lot of calls for. I'm going to let Margie have her piece, and then I'm going to take us to a vote, if that's okay with the body.
Chairman. I want to speak again.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell.
Okay, Margie,
I wish to rise and speak in opposition to the amendment.
I do too.
as Charlie referred to the Hatch Act, I'm a federal employee, and I can now go out and campaign as long as it's not during work hours. I do believe that our staff should not be campaigning or publicly speaking for a candidate during their official tour of duty, but they are dues-paying members, they are event ticket purchasers, however you say it, and they should have the freedom after their tour of duty to speak what they choose to speak as staff and as blind members of our society. Sitting here today, sometimes I hear democracy and sometimes I don't. And this, for those that are intending to vote against this, you are voting against democracy. Thank you.
Amen.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
We've had three against and one
for. I wish to make an amendment.
Okay. We have somebody that wants to amend. Go ahead, ma'am. Who's calling for
this? This is Kim Charleston speaking.
Okay, Kim.
And I would like to make an amendment that we strike number three. The amendment as proposed by the Constitution and Bylaws Committee is fine up until number three, and I would move that we strike that language.
Okay.
Second.
We have move in a second. Let me read that to you all just so you all know how that will sound so that we can... I'm going to get back here. This is the proposed wording with number 3 taken out. One, no member of the Board of Directors or the Board of Publications shall receive compensation for services to the American Council of the Blind. He, she may be reimbursed for actual expenses incurred in the performance of his or her official duties. Two, no compensated staff member of this organization shall be eligible to serve on either the Board of Directors or Board of Publications. And it would end there. So that's moved and seconded, and we are now discussing the amendment.
Mr. Chairman?
Okay, I hear a call for the floor.
This is Carla Rushville.
Go ahead.
I think that the issue raised in number 3 is a viable concern, but I think that we can address it by adding a couple of words, and therefore I would urge that we defeat this amendment, and I would like to propose another amendment instead.
Okay. Do I hear anyone speaking for Mrs. Charleston's amendment?
Yes, I'd like to speak in favor of Ms. Charleston's amendment.
Okay, and you are?
This is Bob Hache. I would argue right. that if we are to have such language as is in Part 3, we will no longer have competent staff within the Office of the American Council of the Blind. I know, for example, folks like Charlie Crawford took a substantial cut in pay when he took this position. He was being compensated very well as commissioner of the Mass Jewish Commission for the Blind. We are going to have one hell of a time, ladies and gentlemen, getting good staff members in this organization if we get close to language as is in number 3. Thank you very much.
Okay. We've had a... Is anyone who wishes to speak against Kim's amendment?
Yes. This is Patrick.
Okay, Pat.
I only wish to speak against the amendment to the extent that I think that number 2 is an equal problem and that perhaps this entire amendment should be reconsidered.
Okay, we've got an amendment.
Section Part 2 is what I'm referring to, that both of them should be dropped.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Let me get a ruling from the parliamentarian on this real quick. Hang on.
Kim made the motion to strike out number 3, and now somebody's saying to... Pat's saying drop Part 2.
If you want to refer it to somewhere, they can, but you can't reconsider it. There's nothing to reconsider.
Yeah, that one passed. Yeah, it did. No. Roll calls will be recorded now.
Okay, will be.
Yes, it will be recorded. Yes, it is.
Okay.
Mr. Chair,
this
is Pat Shrek one more time.
Hang in there, Pat. I'm getting a ruling from the parliamentarian. What is the course of action that's been suggested to me is that we deal with the amendment, which strikes out Part 3 right now, would see how the land lies, and then if somebody would like to, it would be appropriate at that time, after that amendment is dealt with, to make a motion if someone so would
Mr.
like
Chairman?
To do so, to refer back to the committee.
Okay,
Ms. Pomerantz?
Mr. Chair,
I have a request to read Section I-3, since that's the part that we're talking about removing from this constitutional amendment.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, the other part of my question was that I would, having said that, be interested in hearing Carla's proposal.
Let's see what happens with this amendment first. We have to take one thing at a time, ladies and gentlemen. Let me honor the request that's been put to me to read what we're going to strike. Now, this is going to come out, Part number 3 in Section I. All compensated staff of this organization shall refrain from either campaigning or otherwise attempting to influence the outcome of any election. Violation of this subsection may be considered grounds for dismissal. That's what we're going to take out if you vote in favor of doing that. Do I hear any discussion on further discussion on Kim's amendment? Okay. Hearing none. All those in favor of striking Part 3 out of this amendment, the new Section I, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The ayes have it. Okay, let me get...
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Chairman, I move to strike Section 2.
Okay. Okay. You move to strike Section 2. Let me strike Section 3 first of all. I'm doing a lot of striking here. I'm going to strike Section 3 first of all. And... Give me ideas. Okay, Section 3 has been struck, so I hear a motion on the floor to also strike out Section 2, and I will read that for you.
Paul Edwards.
Okay, Paul. I knew that, but thank you. Number 2.
So far there has not been a second.
I heard seconds. Yeah. I did.
There has now.
Okay. The part that Paul's talking about striking out basically says 2. No compensated staff member of this organization shall be eligible to serve on either the Board of Directors or Board of Publications.
Mr. Chairman.
One of the problems we have here, and I'm just wanting to see how to do this. Hang on a second. I want to... What happens, see, in the existing language of the Constitution, we have a provision that basically says no professional staff can serve on... let me find it. I'll read it to you. No professional staff in the
Mr.
current...
Mr. Chairman, I move we table this amendment.
Okay. We have to... let me do this. Okay. I'm going to read... In our current Constitution, Section I, we already have language which basically says the following... Just so we all know what we're doing here. It's the second sentence, I believe, in the current Section I, and it reads, no professional staff employee of the council shall be eligible for election to any office in this organization. So by striking out Part 2, if we were to strike Part 2, the only thing that would concern me, and I'm not speaking either way, I'm just letting you know what would happen, if we were to strike Part 2 and vote to put this... amendment in with Part 2 taken out, what would happen is we would then be saying staff would be eligible to run for just to run for office.
Mr. Chairman, hold on.
Okay, I had a point of clarification. I'm going to take that.
Okay. This is Bob Hashay. Just from speaking around and knowing what's going on, as presently constituted, the Board of Publications includes the editor of the Braille Forum as an advisory person who is not allowed to vote. If we were to leave Part 2 in as is, that would no longer be the case. Therefore, I would second the motion to table.
You know what I would be real happy to do? A motion to table. Hang on. Okay. Move a motion to Now, are we tabling Paul's amendment or the entire motion?
Table this whole damn thing.
Mr. Chair...
Hold on. Yes, ma'am.
I move to table this amendment.
Okay.
I spoke for a clarification a long time ago.
Hold on, everyone. Just cool off a little. I need to, the parliamentarian wishes to consult with me here. Hang on. Okay, let me just explain what the parliamentarian just said to me. Okay, just let me explain this. Let me suggest to you that you could table this. You're perfectly right to do that. However, if you table it and then bring it off the table, it will come back exactly as it looks now. If you refer it back to the Constitution and Bylaws Committee for work to bring it back next year, then it will come back probably in a very different looking form. So you are free to move to table, but it might be more productive, if the maker wishes to withdraw that, it might be more productive for us to refer back to the Constitution and Bylaws Committee.
I'm just...
Okay.
Well, I think we've got to go back then. We've got to be very careful what we do here. I think that's the bottom
point of order.
Okay, Mr. Byington's got a point.
Do not yell into the microphone. Thank you.
I'm sorry, my breath got away from my excitement.
I understand, Michael.
I'm sorry, but the motion to table is not a debatable motion, and I would submit that what the chair is doing is debating the motion.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
I do apologize. Well, we need to move to a vote on the motion to table then.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. All those in favor of the motion.
I don't believe it had a second, Mr. Chair.
It had a second.
It had a second. All those in favor of the motion to table this amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Mr. Chairman.
Let me consult here. It failed.
Mr. Chairman,
I have a point of clarification.
The lady is asking first, so I'm going to take the lady first. Go ahead.
I would like to move to refer this amendment back to the Constitution and Bylaws Committee.
Second.
I heard a motion and a second to refer this whole amendment back to the Constitution and Bylaws Committee. Is there discussion?
Wait, Mr. Chairman, a point of clarification.
Yes.
When this discussion began, we were discussing an amendment to strike Section 2. Now, may I assume, Carla, that your motion to refer refers to the whole amendment?
You are correct.
Okay.
No, we didn't strike. Okay. May I assume that you're not actually speaking to the amendment that was actually on the floor at the time, but rather to the whole amendment?
I am moving to refer this amendment, this proposed amendment, back to the Constitution.
Yeah, but Carla, are you moving to refer the amendment to strike Part 2? Or the whole proposed amendment?
The entire amendment.
Thank you. I just wanted to be clear.
All right. Okay, so let's make sure we understand.
Mr. Chairman.
Carla has made a motion and it's been seconded to refer the entire proposed amendment back to the Constitution and Bylaws Committee for further work. I recognize the gentleman. I recognize the gentleman.
Yes, I've asked for the floor several times for point of clarification. And
sure,
you recognize several people ahead of me. In that same vein, and I'm a little edgy about that, but one of the things that could have clarified some of this on this part, we're serving on the board, you could have clarified it by dividing and saying voting members of the board are ex officio part.
There's already a provision for that.
We are debating the motion to refer, so do I hear discussion? And by the way, I would never want to make a
point of clarification.
Point of clarification, who calls for that?
Joe Tolliver, Michigan.
All right, Joe.
My question is, part of the amendment, I understand, reads that no one who is compensated may, run for office?
No, that's what it says. By the way, Joe, I'm going to rule your question a little out of order because what we're doing is we're debating the motion to refer.
But I need to understand what amendment we're referring and
the entire amendment as.
Okay, we just voted to strike the third
part
section.
Part 3. Yep, we agreed to do that.
So we are referring the first two parts of the amendment for further committee work.
Yes.
May I ask,
Mr. Chairman,
a question?
We're referring what I read originally, as is being whispered in my right ear by the parliamentarian, back to the committee.
That includes Part 3 that we just voted to?
Everything will go back to the committee and we'll work on it.
No.
Mr. Chairman, point of order.
Mr. Chairman.
I heard.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's have order. And let's stop having all these points of order and contention and difficulty over this, okay? Let's figure out what we want to do. Do it so we can move on with our business.
I need a point of clarification, please.
Mr. Chairman.
What is your point of clarification?
I need information.
You need information.
My understanding is that those who are compensated or employed by the American Council of the Blind may not... Was it run for office?
If in the current Constitution,
right.
Joe, it does say that. It does say that no professional staff employee can run for office in the council. That's what it currently says.
On the board of directors.
All right. But okay, is it noted that that is only while they are employed by...
Joe, I'm going to rule you out of order because we're voting to refer this back. And it says employee, so that would seem to me as employee.
Mr. Chairman, I do wish to raise a point of order.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to speak in favor of the motion.
I heard a point of order raised by Mr. Edwards, and then I'll let you do what you want.
And I'm very sorry to be raising this point. I think we've spent an awful lot of time on this, but I'm concerned that we do this correctly. The motion to refer can only now relate to sections 1 and 2 of this amendment because section 3 has already been stricken.
Yeah, you are correct, Paul. And I erred in that, and I'm very sorry. The person that wishes to speak, are you speaking in favor of the motion to refer, sir?
Yes, I am. Steve Dresser.
And Steve Dresser? Okay, go right ahead.
I think it's clear from all of the back and forth that's been going on here that there's an awful lot of confusion about exactly what is happening. And it seems to me that we're serving no purpose by continuing to hash and rehash and debate and redebate an amendment that obviously in its present form is just not going to fly. So I really think we need to refer this back to the Constitution and Bylaws Committee so that they can work on a better version of it.
Okay.
Mr. President. Oh, I'm sorry.
Whoa.
Mr. Chairman.
Are you speaking against the motion to refer?
I am, sir.
Okay.
And I am now standing further away from the microphone. I didn't know how it was loaded. Mr. Chairman, members of this august body, I believe that what we have experienced with this debate is to learn that this amendment is so terribly flawed that it's really better to let the Constitution and Bylaws Committee simply start over in a new year if somebody else wants to bring something to them. I am asking that you vote down the motion to refer so we can deal with this one way or the other and then vote down the amendment. I think it is very unfair to ask the staff who has a strong interest in even the remaining parts of this amendment to wait for a year not knowing what's going to happen or whether the other shoe's going to drop or not. I wouldn't like to work for an employer under that situation. I don't think any of you would either.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
All right. I'm going to move us to a vote. This is, again, we're voting on the motion to refer this amendment back to the Constitution and Bylaws Committee. And all those in favor of that motion, please signify by saying aye. Opposed?
No.
The motion to refer fails. Now, we've had quite a bit of debate on this. I'm going to ask that we call the question. Question's been called.
Mr. Chairman.
Question's been called.
That does not cut off debate.
Mr. Chairman, we have not debated this amendment. We have not debated. Okay, are we discussing the amendment to drop Section 2?
Mr. Chairman.
Okay, we need to take the original amendment to... Let me make sure I'm correct on this.
Mr. Chairman.
Excuse me.
Now, just a moment.
Gene.
Give your attention to Ray. He is chairing. He's answering a question. Stop calling for the floor. He will answer the question, then we will see where to go from there.
I just want to make sure where we're at. Paul had an amendment on the floor to strike... It was Carla, excuse me. I'm sorry. To strike out Section 2.
No, it wasn't.
Actually, it was me, and I withdraw it.
You withdraw? Okay. Now, we are back to the main motion, which is...
Mr. Chairman.
As proposed.
Mitch Pomerantz.
Mr. Chairman.
I'm going to take one for and one against, and then we're going to vote.
Mr. President.
Parliamentary procedure.
Yes.
I believe the seconder must also withdraw or the amendment is still on the floor. Does the seconder withdraw?
Well, there were a multitude of seconders.
I came first and I withdraw.
Okay. Okay. Let's see. Now,
Mr. Chairman,
at a point that I'm going to take one for and one against, and then we're going to vote. Okay, Mitch.
I am still concerned about Section 2 because if passed,
There is no provision for the editor of the Board of Publications to be an ex officio member, editor of the Braille Forum to be an ex officio member of the Board of Publications. I am not at this point in time going to recommend still another amendment, so I believe that this amendment should be defeated and take another shot next year.
Mr. Chairman?
Okay.
Mr. President.
Okay, I heard a point of personal privilege.
Mr. President.
Point of personal privilege. Go ahead with the point of personal privilege.
First of all, I want to say that I'm the maker of the amendment, the original amendment. And I would say that, first of all, the editor of the Braille Forum is not presently and has not been an ex officio member of the Board of Publications. Now, no, that's not true. I would like to also say that I think the current language is better currently than to dismember what is left of my amendment. And therefore, I would like to inform the bylaw committee that I withdraw the amendment.
Okay. Okay. Charlie, I'm told by the parliamentarian that you actually can't do that since it's come through the committee. What I would suggest you all do, that would be the course of action, would be to vote it down. All those in favor of this amendment, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed?
No!
The amendment is defeated.
No.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. This, you know, this got a little contentious, but you know what? It speaks right to the heart of the great principles of this organization. And I want to thank everybody for your indulgence. And thank you to the president for putting me in this position to once again chair this committee. And I thank you all very much. And maybe, I don't know, we'll see. I'll maybe see you next year. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much, Ray. And thank you to the Constitution and Bylaws Committee. I would like to mention another one of these great founding principles of ACB. And I think it may be a greater one than some of the debate and discussion that we've had this afternoon. And that is that constitutional and bylaw amendments should only be brought when they are absolutely necessary for the health of the organization. Ladies and gentlemen, it's after 4 o'clock, and we have 13 resolutions left. We have a necessity in my mind, I don't know about yours, but in mine, to at least go through the formality of asking for old business and new business. And it appears to me very likely, almost as a certainty, that we must meet tomorrow morning. There are various affairs and things that begin at 5 o'clock. We do not have to stop meeting right now, but I'd like to know what your pleasure is and how we might proceed. I would suggest that we might continue working together until 5 o'clock. And at 5 o'clock, we will recess this meeting, and we will then come back into session at 8 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Mr. President?
There are other scheduled events, and I believe, but correct me please, Cynthia or Carla, if I'm wrong, that they begin at 10:30. And Cynthia needs a table mic, Jay.
Thank you.
There you go.
Mr. Chairman, is this mic working?
Yes, it is, but I recognize Cynthia, right? I recognize Cynthia to
Joan
go through
Latimer.
Okay.
There's some confusion.
Hold on. I recognize Cynthia. You're going to have to wait, okay? We'll get to you.
Should have been.
Okay. Tomorrow there is the legislative seminar, the diabetes seminar that starts at 10:30, as well as the board meeting. So what I'll need to know is if we're going to meet, I need to inform the Westin so that all of those events can be pushed back further. There's no problem. I just I just need to know. You need to know the banquet does start. There's pre, the...
Pre-banquet the, is at 6,
pre-banquet
right?
At 6,
okay.
And there are... They've set it up very nicely for us. I don't think we ever had cocktail tables out in the pre-function area before.
Nice.
So they've got some cocktail tables out there for us. And that will be at 6, and then the banquet will be at 7.
Okay, so we could take care of more business until 5 o'clock. One would hope that now we've gotten these contentious resolution bylaws and so on behind us, that we could finish 13 resolutions between now and 5 o'clock and 8 a.m. tomorrow morning and 10:30 and have time for old and new business. Does that seem reasonable to you guys? Okay. Now,
Mr. President.
Now,
Mr.
Robert,
President.
Robert, somebody was calling for the floor before you. Who was that?
Joan, Seattle.
Yes, Joan.
Am I too far to the mic? Am I close to the mic?
Yeah, a little bit, but you're doing fine. What can I do? Or
there
what can we do for you?
There is some confusion about where the banquet is. Some people, I know it says in the program, Ballroom A. And Cynthia told us 2 days ago it was going to be in the Allegheny Room with the wedding.
We moved the banquet for this evening in order to have it streamed on ACB Radio. The banquet is in Allegheny 2. Actually, Allegheny 1, 2, and 3. The banquet tonight is Allegheny 1, 2, and 3. Robert, I recognize you.
Okay, I just need to change our delegates for tomorrow.
Okay.
Our lead delegate will be Paul Edwards, and the alternate will be Jim Crott, because I have to leave.
Okay, thank you very much. Now, we're about to move to yeah.
Okay, Mr. President.
Yeah, Cynthia?
Let me just do some clarification for everybody. As the President said, the banquet is in Allegheny 1, 2, and 3, third floor of the Westin, the location of the candidates forum, the location of the gala. So that is where the banquet will be, the pre-function activities will be just on that third floor outside of that room. Before I let you all go, I do have a couple of announcements. The suggestion box is in front of on the table in front of room 306. So if you have any suggestions, will you please put them in there? If this is your last meeting, you've got a plane to catch tomorrow, you're leaving, please take your badge to to the table outside room 306. We still have some lost and found items. If you've lost something, you still haven't located it yet, go to room 306 and hopefully they will be able to get it for you. If you're using an assistive listening device and this is your last session this evening, then you need to turn it in. If you're going to take it to the banquet with you, then you need to bring it back here tomorrow. Once I can consult with the President and I know about some times, then I can give you and consult with the hotel. Then I'll better know where we're going to be and when. For tomorrow.
Question, please. Mr. Chair?
Yes, what is your question?
We need to change our alternate for tomorrow. Must we also have a delegate as well?
You must have at least one delegate, official delegate, to cast your vote.
I would like to change that so that Joy Francis is our official voting delegate for tomorrow.
And what is your affiliate?
We are the Michigan Council of the Blind and Visually Impaired.
Very well. And the name again, please?
Joy Francis.
Joy Francis. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, who calls for the floor? The lady?
Sandy Edwards from Arkansas.
Yes, Sandy.
On behalf of the Arkansas delegation, none of us will be here in the morning, so this is it for us if you...
Okay.
Whatever.
I'm sorry that, you know...
Mr. President?
I know people had hoped not to meet, but we do have to do it. Now, I'd
Mr.
like
President?
To...
Mr. President?
Yes?
This is the Badger, and I'm the delegate for the Badger.
Yes.
I will not be here tomorrow morning, but Adrian DeBlay will take my spot.
Very well. Thank you.
Mr. President?
Yes?
Sorry, one more announcement. There's a 9 o'clock meeting tomorrow in the Armstrong Room. I suspect we're either going to have to cancel or delay that meeting.
It will have to be delayed almost certainly.
We're going to have to wait.
Cynthia will see you and take care of that.
Yeah, we're going to have to wait. All meetings are going to be delayed or relocated. The Westin has a wedding again this next Saturday, so we'll have to work around them.
I would like now to take a moment to present an award. It's an affiliate outreach award presented to Southern Maryland Chapter of the American Council of the Blind of Maryland. The award is presented in recognition of your outreach and advocacy programs that have made your community more accessible to people who are blind and visually impaired. In Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, July 8, it says, 2003. It's my understanding that Al Pietrolungo is going to accept the award on behalf of this chapter. Al?
Yes.
Here you go.
Ah, nice.
One of those nice plaques.
Yeah. Great. Let me just make a brief comment. We've all been here too long. 3 years ago, we started to outreach to other parts of the state, and the first people to respond to that effort were Bob and Lisa Kerr in Southern Maryland, and they helped us form the first of four new chapters in the state affiliate. And last year, they managed to get a letter in the Washington Post outlining ACB's position about the Help America Vote Act and criticizing their very powerful Congressman Hoyer for crowing about the fact that the National Federation of the Blind was in support of his legislation. Bob very correctly pointed out that we were not. And then they also got, with a three-person demonstration, an APS installed in Leonardtown, Maryland, after a 2.5-year effort. So please join me in applauding their courage and determination. Thanks.
All right. Thanks a lot, Al. And also it gives me great pleasure now to present a distinguished service award of the American Council of the Blind. The award is presented to Bruce Benzler in recognition of his outstanding service to all people who are blind, and especially to those who choose to travel with guide dogs, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, July 7, 2003. Thank you, Bruce Benzler. I now turn the chair back to Jeff Tom, Chairman of Resolutions, for more resolutions.
Okay, we'll see what we can get done here. This is number 12, came to us from Charlie Hodge on disability rights treaties. Whereas, although international treaties exist which address numerous aspects of human rights, no such treaty sets forth the rights of people with disabilities. Whereas delegates to the United Nations are currently drafting a treaty that will address the rights of people with disabilities, and whereas, although this treaty is not expected to take effect until early 2007, indications are that it is meeting with almost universal international acclaim, and whereas the only unequivocal opposition has come from the United States delegation to the United Nations, which has taken the position that every nation should have an exclusive right to design its own policies in the area of disability rights, and whereas this position was taken over the strenuous objections of U.S. disability organizations represented at these treaty negotiations, and whereas this view flies in the face of one of the basic tenets of our country, namely the sanctity of individual rights for all people, including people with disabilities, Now, therefore, be it resolved by the American Council of the Blind in convention assembled this 11th day of July at the David L. Lawrence Convention Center in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, that this organization urges the President of the United States, the Secretary of State, and the United States Ambassador to the United Nations to withdraw their opposition to this proposed treaty. The committee recommends a due pass, and I so move. Any discussion? All those, hearing none, all the, are you calling for the question or do you have a question?
Question.
Okay. All those in favor say aye. All opposed, nay.
Microphone 9, please.
Okay. That resolution has been adopted. We will now go on to a group of resolutions on an interesting issue to you all, I'm sure, or to most of you, cellular phones. And Karen Campbell and many of the Illinois delegation are responsible for bringing some of these to us. Number 15, whereas for many individuals who are blind or visually impaired, cellular telephones are a necessity for independence and security. And whereas many cellular telephones are not accessible or offer only limited accessibility to people who have vision and or hearing impairments. And whereas, although Section 255 of the Telecommunications Act of 1996 requires that a range of models of cellular telephones provide accessible features for persons who have disabilities, many persons who are blind, visually impaired, and or hearing impaired find that the accessibility features currently available on cellular telephones do not work very well. And whereas, as accessibility features are improved in quality and capability, the cost for such features, as well as for peripheral attachments, will increase. And whereas, although Section 255 requires that a range of equipment be made available with accessibility features, none of the provisions in the Telecommunications Act of 1996 prevent manufacturers from assessing additional charges for such features. And whereas this circumstance often results in persons who have vision and or hearing impairments having to pay more than their non-disabled counterparts for equipment to achieve the same telecommunications functions. And whereas roughly 40 of the 50 states have telecommunications equipment distribution programs which assist persons having at least certain disabilities to obtain equipment to achieve accessibility for in-home wireline telephone services. And whereas very few of the states which have such programs provide equipment grants to help equipment or grants to help with cellular access because cellular services are regarded by federal statutes and some state implementing statutes as being enhanced services. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the American Council of the Blind and Convention assembled this 11th day of July, 2003, at the David L. Lawrence Convention Center in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, that this organization urges manufacturers and developers of cellular equipment to acknowledge that much additional work is needed to design and market cellular telephones which truly provide access to all available features on the equipment for all disability groups, and to comply with this readily achievable, legally codified requirement. And be it further resolved that this organization specifically urges manufacturers and developers to continue work on improvements which will make cellular telephones more easily and thoroughly compatible with hearing aids and which will offer access to on-screen information.
All right.
And be it further resolved that this organization urges that access accommodations be designed as standard operational parts of equipment rather than as add-on or peripheral features. And be it further resolved that this organization encourages states that have telecommunications equipment distribution programs to expand those programs to additionally provide equipment or grants to assist persons who have disabilities with the acquisition of devices for cellular telephone access. And be it further resolved, the telecommunications equipment distribution programs are strongly encouraged to ensure that people who are blind or visually impaired are eligible for these programs. And be it further resolved that this organization encourages states which do not currently have telecommunications equipment distribution programs to develop such distribution programs in accordance with service and eligibility criteria set forth in this resolution. And the committee recommends a do pass, and I so move. There is a motion and a second. Is there discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. The resolution has been adopted. And I'm quickly flipping through my files here to the next cellular phone resolution, which is number 16. This is access to visual elements of cellular phones. Whereas cellular phones are becoming an increasingly important part of the daily lives of everyone, including people who are blind or visually impaired, and whereas cellular phones are essential to the safety and independence of many Americans who are blind and visually impaired, and whereas some of the features on even the most basic cellular telephones are inaccessible to people who are blind and visually impaired, and whereas these features include, but are not limited to, status indicators, address books, text messaging, and volume and ringer controls, and whereas the American Council of the Blind and other parties have filed a formal complaint with the Federal Communications Commission, FCC, under Section 255 of the Telecommunications Act of 1996, seeking to require that manufacturers develop and market cellular phones that have features that are accessible to people who are blind or visually impaired, now, therefore, be it resolved by the American Council of the Blind in convention assembled this 11th day of July, 2003, at the David L. Lawrence Convention Center in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, that this organization commends the ACB officers, board of directors, and staff, and others for filing this complaint. And be it further resolved that this organization commends those manufacturers of cellular phones who have begun to work with ACB to explore means by which their products can be made accessible to people who are blind or visually impaired. The committee recommends a do pass, and I so move. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. The resolution is adopted. Okay, we're on number 17, and this is cellular phone directory assistance. Whereas people who are blind or visually impaired often receive free directory assistance through their local home telephone provider, and whereas such assistance enables people who are blind or visually impaired to access telephone numbers that they would otherwise be unable to obtain, and whereas in general, providers of cellular telephone services do not provide free directory assistance, now, therefore, be it resolved by the American Council of the Blind and Convention assembled this 11th day of July at the David L. Lawrence Convention Center in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, that this organization calls upon providers of cellular telephone services to make directory assistance available free of charge to people who are blind or visually impaired, as many local home telephone providers currently do. The committee recommends a do pass, and I so move. There is discussion, I believe. Is there no discussion? Okay.
Mr. President, I'd like to add on a further resolve that copies of this resolution be sent to all cellular phone providers.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to amend the resolution to direct this organization transmit copies of the resolution to all cellular telephone providers. It's getting late, folks. All those, any discussion on the amendment? All those in
Mr.
hearing
Chair,
none.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to see if we can manage a friendly amendment here. All cellular telephone providers is a very large number. And it seems to me that we would probably accomplish most of what we want by suggesting that we send it to the seven leading.
Yes, would that be considered acceptable to the seconder and the maker of the resolution? There is like six or seven major cellular telephone providers in the country.
Name the major ones?
Yes. What I would recommend that people do is simply go by the size of the companies and their subscriber base and send to the leading seven.
That sounds good.
I don't hearing that is acceptable. We will incorporate major into the amendment. All those in favor?
Mr. Chair?
This is, you want to debate the amendment?
Yes, I do. I wish to speak against, I wish to speak against, not the amendment, the resolution.
We haven't voted on the amendment as yet, so we are not in order quite yet. All those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, the amendment has been carried. Now the gentleman who wishes to speak against the amendment. The floor is yours.
I wish to speak against the resolution because the idea of cellular phones predicts portability. Therefore, we would not be in a place where we would have use of a telephone book. Therefore, people who are blind and visually impaired are asking for a special agreement in this because many people who are using cellular phones do not have access to telephone books because they're in transit while using those cellular phones.
Do we have any other discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
This is Artis Bazin. Actually, the gentleman is incorrect. Sighted people can get the website on their cell phone and get the phone number that way, whereas we as blind persons cannot.
Okay. Is there any discussion? We've had one on each side. Okay. Hearing none. We'll vote on the resolution. All those in favor of the resolution, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. The resolution has been adopted. Okay, this is number 18. We have finished with cellular phones for today. We're on transportation funding, and this resolution came to us from the Transportation Task Force and their excellent work. Whereas the Transportation Equity Act for the 21st century, T21, is the federal law which sets transportation funding priorities for the United States. And whereas the funding allocations established within this law determine to a large extent the relative shares of federal funds which are allocated to a variety of transportation priorities, including but not limited to highway and road construction and maintenance, public transit project construction, public transit operations, rural transit and paratransit capital improvements and operations, alternative transportation program development and funding, and pedestrian access enhancements. And whereas T21 is scheduled for reauthorization during the current congressional session, and whereas the proposed Transportation Reauthorization Act, when enacted, will remain in effect for a 6-year period, and whereas it is unlikely that the transportation priorities and funding levels within this act would change significantly once the act is adopted. And whereas current funding levels are insufficient for pedestrian access enhancements, public transportation, paratransit, rural transit, or other alternative forms of transit for Americans who do not drive, including people who are blind or visually impaired. And whereas, while proposals by the Bush administration would provide limited increases in funding for rural transportation and senior/disabled transit programs, these proposed funding increases actually diminish the proportionate share of total transportation dollars allocable for those programs. And whereas most Americans who do not drive, including those who are blind or visually impaired, would benefit directly from improvements to paratransit and public transit services. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the American Council of the Blind in convention assembled this 11th day of July at the David L. Lawrence Convention Center in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, that this organization directs its officers, board of directors, and staff to take all actions necessary to ensure that the reauthorization of T21 contains significant increases in funding levels for public transit and other transportation programs that benefit the blind and visually impaired. And be it further resolved that this organization urges all state and special interest affiliates to assist the national staff in advocating for a favorable reauthorization of T21. And be it further resolved that the ACB Executive Director is instructed to submit a report to the President, the Board of Directors, and the Transportation Task Force detailing the outcome of ACB's efforts related to the reauthorization of T21. The committee recommends a due pass, and I so move.
Second.
Any discussion?
Mr. Chairman?
There is discussion.
Well, there's a point of information. I hope Alice Richard is here. I believe that the subsequent legislation has a different name.
Mitch,
accuracy.
the subsequent legislation does, but T21 is the act that is essentially the existing law. And so, when we refer to reauthorizing it, we are not technically incorrect.
Mr. Chairman, my understanding is that the existing law is being rolled into subsumed by the new proposed legislation. I could be incorrect, but that's my understanding.
Mr. Chairman, this is Melanie Brunson. Can I speak to that?
Yes.
That would be incorrect once we that would be correct once we determine which version is actually going to be enacted. The only version that as of yet has a name is the Safe T3 bill, but that is only one of the bills, and it is the White House's proposal. It's not the committee bill in the House, and the Senate bill has another name altogether. So, yes, that will be correct, but we don't know which bill it's going to be subsumed into yet.
Then again, would it make more sense, rather than to give it a specific name, to refer to it as transportation legislation or proposed
legislation? We only gave it a specific name in referring to the present law.
Okay.
Okay, is there any other discussion on the resolution? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. The resolution has been adopted. Now, we're going to move on in just a moment. As soon as I can call one up, that is. Beating my way through these here. Okay. This is number 24. Whereas the Department of Veterans Affairs provides accessible computer systems to blind veterans, generally through a residential program lasting 30 to 42 days. And whereas upgraded accessible software bug fixes circulated by accessibility software companies often necessitate the acquisition of more powerful computer hardware. And whereas the Department of Veterans Affairs requires veterans to return to its residential training program to obtain such upgrades and training to use them. And whereas 9 to 18 month waiting lists for readmission and additional time away from home and family constitute hardships for blind veterans, and whereas local options for retraining should be available in addition to the option for returning to a VA Blind Rehabilitation Center training program, and whereas such training should be provided by trainers expert in the use of accessible technology for the blind, now, therefore, be it resolved by the American Council of the Blind and Convention assembled this 11th day of July at the David L. Lawrence Convention Center in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, that this organization urges the Department of Veterans Affairs to make policy changes enabling the option for provision of such retraining through qualified local providers as well as through traditional VA programs. And be it further resolved that such policies require provision for payment of local training costs through the VA central office. And the committee recommends they do pass, and I so move.
Mr. Chairman.
Margie.
Thank you. I wish to speak in opposition of this resolution. I work as a visual impairment service team coordinator for the San Francisco VA. And it's not an issue. There's two points I wish to make. One is I frequently contract with local service providers. It's not an issue of the VA headquarters. It's a local issue. And there's a number of inaccuracies in the resolution. For example, the blank to 18 months. The center that I refer to has no more than a six-week wait list. And my final point is this is already in motion. We, as VIST and our blind rehab outpatient positions bros, have been asked to submit lists of local service providers. And national office is already considering not only having it as an option, but removing potentially the computer programs from the VA and totally outsourcing the whole thing. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes. Mr. Byington.
Michael Byington. I'm speaking on behalf of Sanford Alexander and the VIVA affiliate. I believe Sanford has left, but Sanford was the person who brought this resolution to the committee. He also is a VIST coordinator and has a job identical in title, at any rate, to Margie's, although a very different area of the country geographically. And apparently there are considerably greater problems in some of these areas in some parts of the country than there are in others. Sanford did bring the committee a good deal of research and had convinced the VIVA affiliate that this was a resolution that they should support, and I would continue to encourage its adoption. Thank you very much.
Mr. President.
Mr. Chairman.
Or Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Yeah, Tom Frank from Vermont. I'm a blinded veteran, and I am for this resolution. Great for San Francisco. The East Coast stinks. So I just go out and buy my own computer because it's too much of a hassle to deal with the VA, and they do not upgrade. And it's a matter of, by the way, $1,000 a day to go to that residential in the hospital. So it would save the government money, and it would get better services to blinded veterans. So I'm for this resolution.
Any further discussion?
Mr. Chairman, this is Skip Sharp. I'm a past national president of BVA, and I'm on a committee between the BVA and the Blind Rehabilitation Service of the VA, and we're making steps in that direction. And there is a 320-person waiting list nationwide to get into blind rehab centers, and this will help us move forward, although they said they're going to move forward, but they've said that many times before and haven't, so I support this resolution.
Okay, we've had three in favor. If there's any more against, I'll accept you one. Hearing none, all those in favor of the resolution say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say nay. The resolution has been adopted. Now, we're going to go on to, we're going to do one quick thing as a group. We're not going to read them, but in talking to the president, I think we should acknowledge it today, since if we have to go into tomorrow, there won't be as many of us here. We have three resolutions written that we annually write, but of which there are none that are more important, dealing with the outstanding efforts of the volunteers at this convention. And they really have been great. And also, of course, as every year, the outstanding job that Marjorie Beeman does as the volunteer coordinator. The efforts of the convention center and hotels and their staffs. And last but not least, the great efforts of the Pennsylvania Council of the Blind and the Host Committee, Gene Barton, etc.
Mr. Chair, I move that we pass these resolutions as a group without being read.
There is a motion and a second that numbers 8, 9, and 10, concerning the subjects to which I have just alluded, be passed as a group. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay.
Nay.
The resolutions have been adopted. Okay. Now this is one that if I couldn't find it for a little bit in my Braille note, and it's a darn good thing because there are some Braille readers out there that might have shot me if I hadn't found it. Number 19, I was worried about it here. This deals with Louis Braille. Whereas in the early 19th century, people who were blind had limited opportunities for the acquisition of knowledge and skills. And whereas those limited opportunities resulted largely from the fact that learning depended upon repetition and memorization. And whereas because of this limited opportunity, most blind people were unable to achieve their maximum potential. And whereas Louis Braille's invention of a tactile reading and writing system enabled blind people to become literate, and whereas this literacy has increased the potential of blind people around the world to pursue areas of employment previously believed to be available only to the sighted population. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the American Council of the Blind Convention assembled this 11th day of July, 2003, at the David L. Lawrence Convention Center in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, that this organization urges the United States Postal Service to design and issue a stamp in honor of Louis Braille to commemorate the 200th anniversary of his birth in 2009. And be it further resolved that this stamp be designed in such a manner as to reflect the invention of Braille, which has afforded blind people around the world an increased opportunity for literacy. And the committee recommends a do pass. Discussion. Hearing none, all those in favor of the resolution say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay.
No.
The resolution has been adopted. Okay. We got a few, not five.
If we really tried hard, we could maybe finish by five. So remember, if you have a point to raise, it better be a good one.
I'm trying to call these things up. And of course, the quicker you try to rush through the files, the quicker you don't find them. Okay.
I wish you guys could hear Jeff up here pushing buttons and running that display. It's going crazy.
Video Describe DVDs is number 26. Whereas a substantial number of motion pictures with video description and closed captioning are being shown in theaters. And whereas virtually all these movies are subsequently released for sale as DVDs. And whereas most of these DVDs do not include the descriptive video track, but do contain closed captioning. And whereas even when the release does contain a descriptive video track, this fact is not indicated on the packaging. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the American Council of the Blind Convention assembled this 11th day of July at the David L. Lawrence Convention Center in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, that this organization urges those preparing motion picture DVDs for release for sale to include a descriptive video track when it is available. And be it further resolved that this organization also urges those preparing the packaging for DVDs to include a clear label in a standard location on the box which alerts the potential customer to the availability of video description. The committee recommends a do pass, and I so move. Now, this was brought to us by Paul Edwards, and I forget whether Lua was involved in this or not. Things are happening too fast here. They were not. Okay. Any discussion?
Yeah, I have a question. This is Connie from Minneapolis. I'm wondering why the phrase "wherever possible" was in there, because to me that says if it's not there, then they don't have to do it. But what would make them have to? And I'm interested in making them have to create it, because I think we should just get it.
Okay. All those in favor of the resolution say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. The resolution has been adopted. We're now on to number 23, Surface Transportation Act and Kennelly. I always pronounce this wrong. Amendment. This came from RSVA. Whereas legislation to authorize the Surface Transportation Act T21 is pending before the Congress, and whereas Section 111B of the Surface Transportation Act, the Kennelly Amendment, provides to licensed blind vendors a priority to operate vending machines at rest stops on interstate highways. And whereas the said Kennelly Amendment may be subjected to revision or outright repeal during the authorization of the Surface Transportation Act, and whereas any attempt to rescind, limit, or circumscribe the Kennelly Amendment's priority provisions would constitute a threat to the continuing livelihood of many licensed blind vendors throughout the United States. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the American Council of the Blind and Convention assembled this 11th day of July 2003 at the David L. Lawrence Convention Center in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, that this organization vigorously opposes any attempt to repeal or otherwise adversely affect the priority for licensed blind vendors contained in Section 111B of the Surface Transportation Act. And be it further resolved that this organization calls upon all members of Congress to affirmatively protect and guarantee the continued existence and inclusion of the Kennelly Amendment's priority provisions in any enacted reauthorization of the Surface Transportation Act. And be it further resolved that this organization instructs its officers, board of directors, and staff to transmit this resolution to all appropriate members of Congress. And the committee recommends a do pass, and I so move. There's a motion and a second. All those in favor of the resolution, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. Thank you very much. The resolution has been adopted. Oh, there's about four. Number 27, 2027.
We've got about 15 minutes. We probably can do it.
ACB and ALA. Whereas the American Council of the Blind, and this did come from Lua, ACB is an organization of people who are blind or visually impaired with more than 20,000 members throughout the United States. And whereas Library Users of America is an affiliate of the American Council of the Blind, dedicated to improving access to all kinds of library services for people who are blind and visually impaired. And whereas the American Library Association is the primary professional organization of librarians and is dedicated to creating and promoting standards for library service that ensure the broadest access to libraries for the people of the United States. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the American Council of Blind in convention assembled this 11th day of July 2003 at the David L. Lawrence Convention Center in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, that this organization joins with its affiliate, the Library Users of America, in making the following recommendations to the Board of Directors of the American Library Association. One, that the ALA Board publish a document reminding all of the standard-setting bodies working under the aegis of the American Library Association to incorporate into their standards elements that reaffirm the obligation of public libraries to make their collections, catalogs, and programs accessible to all people with disabilities, especially to individuals who are blind or visually impaired. Two, that the ALA Board convey the concern of the American Council of the Blind and the Library Users of America that many of the catalogs, electronic books, e-books, and other new technological approaches that are broadening the range of media available at public libraries are not incorporating standards that will make them easily available to patrons who are blind or visually impaired. And three, that the ALA Board prepare a resolution for submission to its membership that clearly serves notice to the developers of catalog interfaces, e-books, and other new technologies that the availability of blind and disabled people, excuse me, that the ability of blind and disabled people to utilize such products must be an absolute requirement in determining which products or media to purchase. And be it further resolved that this organization strongly urges its officers, board of directors, and staff, along with Library Users of America, to take all steps necessary to actively assist the American Library Association in implementing the objectives in this resolution. The committee recommends a do pass, and I so move.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Ken Stewart. It's come to my attention in New York that there are many, many people who go to libraries to use computers. Would that be included by this in this resolution, or could it be somehow incorporated so that they need to make their computers accessible that are in the libraries?
The Mr. Edwards, who worked with this, with the resolution on the committee, says that it is so included.
Thank you.
All those in favor of the resolution, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say nay. Okay, three left. The resolution has been adopted. Sorry about that. Resolution 2003-28. Whereas this involves e-books, and again from Lua. Whereas the fastest growing area of book publishing is represented by the production of e-books, which are protected software files that can only be played on specific brand name players, such as Microsoft Reader and Adobe eBook Reader. And whereas e-books have the potential of substantially increasing the information availability to people who are blind or visually impaired, and whereas none of the currently available commercial e-book readers is fully or even moderately accessible, now therefore be it resolved by the American Council of Blind and Convention assembled this 11th day of July at the David L. Lawrence Convention Center in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, that this organization joins with its affiliate, Library Users of America, in directing the President of the American Council of the Blind to prepare a document for ACB's Information Access Committee outlining the current problems of creating e-books that are fully accessible to people who are blind or visually impaired. And be it further resolved that the Information Access Committee is hereby directed to prepare a report outlining the efforts that need to be taken to ensure that e-book technology can be fully and comfortably accessed by users who are blind or visually impaired, with this report to be delivered to the President by the end of 2003. And be it further resolved that this organization directs its Information Access Committee to develop a set of priorities and positions concerning this issue and to make such recommendations available to the manufacturers of the various e-book formats. And be it further resolved that this committee is directed to communicate with those bodies currently engaged in developing standards for e-book platforms, to be certain that they incorporate into those standards means by which screen readers and braille displays can access e-books, notwithstanding the need for protection schemes that safeguard the intellectual property incorporated into e-books. And be it further resolved that the Information Access Committee is hereby directed to report to the 2004 meeting of Library Users of America on the progress they have made by that time. The committee recommends a due pass, and I so move. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. The resolution has been adopted. Okay, we have a couple more. Okay. I think this is 29. We're going to see when I open it. It is. Paper ballots from accessible voting machines. Whereas the Help America Vote Act of 2002 requires state and local election officials to provide voting systems which are accessible to and usable by people who are blind and visually impaired for use in federal elections. And whereas this requirement can currently be met by direct recording electronic DRE voting systems, and whereas virtually none of the certified DRE voting systems provide any means of producing a permanent record or hard copy of a voted ballot, and whereas Representative Rush Holt, Democrat, New Jersey, has introduced H.R. 2239, the Voter Confidence and Increased Accessibility Act of 2003, amending the Help America Vote Act of 2002 to require that all voting systems used in federal elections provide a voter-verified paper record or hard copy of each voted ballot, and whereas this proposed legislation is being used by state and local governments as an excuse to delay the purchase of accessible voting systems, and whereas these delays are occurring in spite of the fact that there is no indication that requiring a permanent record or hard copy of voter ballots is necessary for protecting the integrity of elections. And in fact, nationally recognized election experts assert that imposition of this requirement would dramatically increase the probability of election irregularities. And whereas no evidence has ever been presented demonstrating that certified DRE voting systems are any more vulnerable or susceptible to security violations than optical scan voting systems, and whereas there being no evidence of vulnerability or susceptibility to security violations, there is no justification for requiring voting system manufacturers or state and local governments to provide paper copies of voted ballots, Now, therefore, be it resolved by the American Council of Blind Convention assembled this 11th day of July, 2003, at the David L. Lawrence Convention Center in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, that this organization opposes H.R. 2239. Be it further resolved that this organization directs its officers, directors, and staff to work with its state and special interest affiliates to oppose adoption of any state or federal legislation that would require delivery to the voter of a copy of his or her voted ballot. And be it further resolved that this organization opposes all efforts to delay purchase of accessible voting equipment because of unfounded and unsubstantiated security concerns about the integrity of ballots cast on DRE voting systems. And the committee recommends a do pass, and I so move.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Just a point of information that the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights has just come out with a statement on this issue which favors the resolution, so we should pass it.
Okay. Yeah, get it out of there. Okay. Excuse me. Hearing no more discussion, all those in favor of the resolution say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. The resolution has been adopted. Okay. We got one more. At least I hope that's all we have, because that's the last one I see here.
Well, there's this big stack of Braille over here, Jeff.
I don't have a voice to read it.
Just kidding.
Okay, we have 2003-30. They're joking at my expense over here. Detectable warnings for key stations. Whereas detectable warnings on platform edges at transit stations provide life-saving safety information to all transit riders, especially those who are blind or visually impaired. And whereas the Americans with Disabilities Act, ADA, provides that transit authorities must install detectable warnings in key stations only. And whereas since the enactment of the ADA, research has shown the value of detectable warnings in preventing injury and death to transit riders. And whereas the American Council of the Blind has long supported the use of detectable warnings on transit platforms. And whereas the Congress of the United States is currently considering the reauthorization of the Surface Transportation Act, which will provide funds for projects to enhance and improve the usability of transit systems. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the American Council of Blind Convention assembled this 11th day of July at the David L. Lawrence Convention Center in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, that this organization seek inclusion of provisions in reauthorizing legislation for the Surface Transportation Act, which would make funds specifically available for the installation of detectable warnings on platform edges at all stations within a transit system, as well as provisions that would strongly encourage transit authorities to install detectable warnings on all transit station platforms. The committee recommends a do pass, and I
second.
So move. Hearing no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. The resolution has been adopted, and that concludes the report of the resolution.
Now, you see how much we can get done when we put our mind to it, ladies and gentlemen. And with a pretty high degree of unanimity as well. I thank you for that very much. There's just a few very quick things. Please don't go quite yet. Is Steve Spiker still in the room? Steve? Well, we'll see if he comes to a microphone. The issue is that we need a small group to get together and bring some recommendations to the board of directors tomorrow regarding the prioritization of resolutions. And Steve has done that for many years for ACB and done it very capably. I thought he might be willing to do it again, along with Melanie and Jeff and whoever else would care to get together and do that.
Do you guys have a room?
Mr. President, point of inquiry.
What's your point of inquiry?
Which agenda items are left to take care of before?
Well, I'm getting to that, but I want to deal with this one first, okay?
That's
all these points of inquiry and information and so on. Do you know how much time we've wasted on that today?
Thank you.
Now
we will, in answer to the question, we will unless I'm told otherwise, or even if not, we'll meet at the Armstrong Room door at 8:30 and see whether we have the room or not and go elsewhere if need be.
Okay, Armstrong at 8:30. I will now call for any old business to come before the convention. And I hear no calls for the floor. Is there any new business to come before the convention?
Mr. President?
Yes, Robert.
I would just like to make a recommendation. I thought about doing it as a motion, but I think I'll refrain from that in a matter of time. But I would just like to recommend we try to handle some of these resolutions and constitution and bylaw changes earlier in the week, and that maybe we extend the time that we use to deal with business earlier in the week so we don't get caught like we did this time.
Thank you very much, but we talk about this every year, and unless you want to significantly decrease the program events at the convention, we're really doing the best we can. The way to get this problem solved is to debate more efficiently, stop some of these contentious, time-consuming points that come up. You listen to the tapes of this, and I think you'll be surprised at how that goes. But thank you. Any other new business? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Question. Question, Mr. President.
Yes, your question.
This is Teddy Joy on behalf of Winifred Downing. The question is, when and where is the board meeting scheduled tomorrow?
I'll get there. Where is the board meeting? There's a board room. It's in the program. Consult your program, and you will know where the meeting is. I do want... Yes, it is. It is 1:30 in the program.
Where do we turn in the listening devices?
Westmoreland Central.
Where do we turn in the listening devices?
Cynthia, get to a mic, please.
You can turn those assisted listening devices into the information desk right now.
We answer your, whose phone is that?
I also want to make an announcement. The board meeting of ACB will begin at 1:30, and it will begin with an executive session, and that executive session will last for some small period of time, perhaps a half hour, perhaps 45 minutes. So be aware of that.
Mr. President?
That means non-board members can come late, and I'm sure you'll be happy about that.
Mr. President?
Yes?
We never did have time for a treasurer's report.
No, I'm not. Okay.
Okay.
So what's your pleasure?
Well... You could give one briefly. You could do it on the ACB leadership list.
And would you like me to do it on the leadership list and in the forum then? Okay. I mean, I can do that if that's your pleasure. I just wanted to make sure you're...
Thank you, Artis, for bringing that up. That's a very important point. Okay.
Mr. President?
Westmoreland. Cynthia?
Yeah, is there any other information? I'm about ready to head back to the Westin, and just to let everybody know, just to repeat, the board meeting is at the executive session, you're saying, starts at 1:30?
That's correct.
Westmoreland Central, which is the second floor of the Westin Hotel, and I need to talk to you about some details about that a little later.
That's fine. And where do people turn in the listening devices?
People turn in the listening devices at room 306. There'll be a box. Turn in your badges at room 306. There is a box. And I thought I heard something else. Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have a number of door prizes that we could give away.
Question about the listening devices, okay. Please.
Go ahead.
This is Karen Campbell. If you're going to use them for the banquet tonight,
okay.
Where do you turn them in?
Okay. If you're going to use them for the banquet, then we will have an area just... we don't know where yet, but that you'll turn them in at the end of the banquet. We'll announce where the box is going to be. Right now, I can't give you an exact location.
Okay, thank you.
But it will be announced at the banquet.
Yes.
Very
okay,
good point.
Thank you.
Yes.
You bet. Good point.
I'm afraid this thing's going to drop if I let go.
Yeah, that's all right.
Mr. Chairman?
Ed Bradley.
I move that we give away the door prizes at the banquet tonight and not delay this any longer.
Well, Ed, I thought we'd do like three or four right now for those who want to stay. I don't want to stay, but we can adjourn the convention, give three or four away now if Nona and Dennis and Gene are of the mind to stay and do that. The longer they stay, the fewer people they'll be. And then we could give several more away tonight at the banquet. Would that be okay? Chris?
Are you going to talk about the life members reception?
Mm-hmm. The life members reception began at 5 o'clock.
Yep.
Your life members are now missing wonderful wine, cheese, whatever. Please do come if you're a life member of ACB. We put together something nice and something special for you. It's in room 2623 in the Westin Hotel.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. President.
Yes.
Move to adjourn.
Mr. President.
It's been moved and seconded to adjourn.
Question.
Who's the gentleman with the question?
Quick question.
Question.
I have
debatable.
I'm not debating. I have a question.
What's your question?
Yeah, I hate to ask this, but if we're adjourning, what is it that we're doing at 8:30 tomorrow morning?
Well, when we adjourn, that's an important point, and I'm sorry if I know that not everybody here is parliamentary minded. We have gotten done with the resolutions. We're actually adjourning the convention. We're not going into recess. We're adjourning the convention. That means we don't have to be here at 8:30 tomorrow.
Yay!
And I thank you for that question. That was an important one.
Point of order, Mr. President. I have been requested to ascertain the nature of the executive session at the beginning of the board meeting tomorrow, if that's possible.
It is prescribed in the Constitution and bylaws, and it's being held for the reasons allowed by the Constitution and bylaws. Now, all those in favor of the motion to adjourn the convention, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion carries. Thank you all very much. We'll see you next year.
And that is the end of the 42nd Annual Convention of the American Council of the Blind. We will, of course, be back for the banquet at 8 o'clock or so this evening. That's in just under 3 hours. Now, it is possible that things will be a little bit later than that. It just depends on how quickly we all consume our food. So if you hear music for a little while, then chances are that that's only because we're still eating. Everybody's got to have food. I'd like to thank those who have been in touch by email and MSN Messenger, although I'll say a final goodbye from the convention this evening when we broadcast from the Western Convention Centre Hotel, where the banquet is going to be held. Until then, this is Jonathan Mosen saying goodbye from the Berg.